Greetings and welcome to It's About Florida, a monthly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest to our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Our guests today are reporters Gray Rohr, Kathleen McGrory, and Tia Mitchell. We're at the halfway point of the 2015 legislative session. Gray Rohr is a reporter for the Orlando Sentinel's Tallahassee Bureau. Kathleen McGrory covers state government and politics for the Miami Herald. And Tia Mitchell is the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Florida Times Union. Our conversations with reporters Gray Rohr, Kathleen McGrory, and Tia Mitchell coming up on It's About Florida. Well, greetings and welcome to It's About Florida. Joining us in the studio today are the Orlando Sentinel's Gray Rohr, the Florida Times Union's Tia Mitchell, and the Miami Herald's Kat McGrory. Thank you all for joining us at the halfway point, a little bit over, of the 2015 legislative session.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and do a brief recap. We're at the stage where bills are dying, and a lot of bills have sort of fallen by the wayside. One of them that was a big issue early on but looks now to be kind of harmless is the transgender bathroom bill by Representative Frank Artiles. That one stoked a lot of anger in the transgender community, and now it looks like it went bye-bye. What happened?
Well, I think one of the things that didn't get as much attention early on was that the bill was never alive in the Senate to begin with. The Senate companion bill read nothing like the House bill. The Senate companion bill didn't mention gender, or it was just not as restrictive, not as controversial. So even if Artiles' bill had been passed by the House, which you're right, it's kind of stalled out in the House, it was never kind of considered in that form in the Senate. And even the Senate version never got a committee hearing either. So it's pretty much dead. But in the process, the LGBTQ community was pretty outraged.
Oh, yeah, we heard a lot about that. And, you know, that seems to be kind of with respect to some of these dead bills, that they may be alive in one chamber, but the other chamber isn't following through. You've got differences with respect to several gun proposals that are moving. I think specifically the university campus carry bill, highly contested, and then the one that would have allowed designated people in public schools to carry guns. Both of those have seemed to fall by the wayside. And at the beginning of the session, again, we heard a lot about those as well.
That K-12 guns bill is actually up for a vote on Wednesday. And my understanding is that there won't be enough votes in the House in the Senate for that to move along. Senate Education Committee Chairman John Legge has been adamantly opposed to that one. And I know he wants to make sure that that doesn't move in his chamber. But with regards to the campus carry bill, that's found pretty widespread support. And folks have said, look, those are adults, and that's kind of a right to bear arms question. And the Republicans in both the House and Senate seem to be on board. I think the question is just going to be if it has enough gas in the tank to make it across the finish line. It's got a couple, I believe, committee stops left in the Senate.
A couple of committee stops, and it's running into problems with the university police chiefs. Now, we're seeing a battle here between the National Rifle Association and the university police chiefs. The NRA says, well, you guys are acting like lobbyists. You should be forced to register. I mean, there's that spat going on there as well.
And the college presidents have also come out against it. And we've seen numerous student groups show up at the Capitol to say, this is not a good idea. This is not something that we would like to see moving forward, and yet it seems that the NRA has been the overpowering force here.
You know, a lot of things have been sort of trying to gain steam, but it seems like this has just become a really slow-moving session. And it seems like the big sticking point is this kind of ongoing stalemate between the House and Senate over general health care policy, but really focused on two issues: the low-income pool, which is a pot of federal money that reimburses hospitals for uncompensated care, and a possible Medicaid expansion. The Senate is pushing a sort of privatized version of that, but it would still use federal money. And yesterday we got a letter from CMS. Florida got a letter from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that said you can't have one without the other. Basically.
Yeah, they basically said what most people following this had pretty much known all along, which was that the the federal government was telling Florida that Medicaid expansion is a replacement for LIP, and one is tied to the other. They both are pretty much for the same population. Medicaid expansion would provide health care coverage on the front end, which is cheaper preventative care rather than these people who don't have insurance pretty much showing up at hospitals and emergency rooms for more expensive emergency-type care. And so this has been the culmination of a back-and-forth spat. I mean, that's been the main thrust with not just the House and the Senate, but the governor's office and the federal government. Everyone's pointing fingers at the other. There doesn't seem much of a resolution on the horizon at this point that anyone can see.
You know, we started off this legislative session talking about a special session. We were barely into, what, week two before it was pretty much already widely known that there would be a strong possibility that the session would go over because of this issue. And now we have the House digging in its heels on this. It does not want to accept that Medicaid money. And you even hear things like how the House Speaker basically saying that when two senators went to Washington, they may have set them up. You know, it's kind of like this very contentious relationship that I don't think we've seen in a couple years. It's been a couple cycles since we've seen, you know, two legislative leaders sort of going at it like this.
Right. It was pretty clear from the beginning that Senate wanted Medicaid expansion. The House had wanted nothing to do with it. And it's led to a lot of legislative inertia, basically, just trickling down a lot of the other issues, especially because the Senate built it into its budget. And so now we're at this stalemate, basically, between both chambers, and nobody is moving.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that Florida hasn't heard back yet from the federal government as to whether or not it's going to get these LIP dollars. And the federal piece of that is $1.3 billion, which is a big chunk of change. And you've got the Senate saying, hey, look, we don't feel comfortable moving forward and committing state dollars if we don't know what's going to happen with these LIP funds. You know, and then you've got the House saying, well, let's move forward with things like tax cuts and record spending for K-12 education. So, you know, their philosophies, their approaches to building the budget have just become totally different. And frankly, I mean, it from the outside looks like a big game of chicken, because if the federal government is indeed trying to put pressure on Florida to extend Medicaid, then they don't need to come back to Florida with an answer on the LIP question immediately. So that, you know, could remain a question mark, that could remain in limbo and really push legislators to give a serious, you know, consideration to a special session.
And I think that's the key point. Game of chicken is exactly how at least some of the executives, the hospitals in the Orlando area have been describing it, because they're sitting there watching this sort of finger-pointing game. And meanwhile, they don't know what their budgets are going to look like.
Yeah.
They're very slowly starting to consider. Some of them, you know, insist they won't cut services, but they're going to have to cut somewhere if they're not going to get these billions of dollars that they've counted on.
Tia, is either chamber really talking to the other? Are they having any conversations?
I think they are. But I don't think they have come to agreement on the big issue of the day, which is healthcare. You know, you can talk about education and criminal justice and all the other parts of the budget and think you're fine. I would think that if they were able to work out healthcare, we would find that everything else quickly falls into line. However, healthcare is really, really a tough one because they just philosophically disagree, you know, on a fundamental decision about taking federal Medicaid expansion dollars. That's not easy to compromise if one person says, no, we should not take federal money, and the other person says, yes. There's no in-between of that, you know, because Medicaid expansion is all or nothing. You either do Medicaid expansion completely or you don't do it at all. And it's going to be up to the two sides to determine if, you know, it's hard to say how they're going to figure this out because both sides are pretty dug in. And it's also become very politicized, which I don't think really helps the policy debate because it's become more and more focused on the politics.
And speaking of the politics, a group that's really been out there kind of really lobbying the Senate about its position has been Americans for Prosperity. Now, we've seen them. They've been distributing mailers all session, but apparently the Senate is getting really sort of tired of those mailers. You saw yesterday Senator Garcia pretty much going after Americans for Prosperity on a separate issue, telemedicine. And he's like, basically, you told people we weren't doing anything on this. And then the Americans for Prosperity spokeswoman says, well, maybe we miscommunicated a bit. But you've seen this kind of tension with groups that Republicans are usually aligned with sort of breaking down in the Senate because of this issue.
Yeah, when you send mailers and run ads saying that that telling people in their districts that their senators are only for Medicaid expansion, want all this federal government spending, and on another issue they sent mailers out was over the film incentive stuff. Yeah, there's going to be tension. Yeah.
You noted that it had been over this, but it's also been over the film incentives. Mm-hmm. We've seen an increase in activity from AFP this particular session at a level, though, that I don't think we've seen in the past. And I know that they've really geared up their Florida operations. What are they going for? How are they trying to influence the conversation that's happening right now?
Well, AFP is a Tea Party group. They're funded by the Koch brothers. They're very, I guess if you ask them, they would say, you know, they're free market, less government kind of group. But I think what AFP doing is they're gearing up like everyone else is for 2016. And AFP wants to be part of the conversation. And so I think AFP has made a strategic decision to become more of the conversation now in Tallahassee so that they could kind of have the name recognition and the street cred to be more of a conversation during election season. So I think it's kind of strategic. I mean, I think they also believe, you know, they don't believe in film incentives. They don't believe in funding sports facilities. They don't believe in Medicaid expansion. So, I mean, they're sticking to their principles, but they're doing it in a way also that's trying to get their name out there. Again, it's politics.
Well, right. Apparently it's working. I mean, should Senate Republicans be worried?
Well, one of the more interesting relationships, I mean, you say that it's working. The AFP state director is Chris Hudson, and his father is actually Matt Hudson, a representative from Naples who is in charge of the House health care budget. So they've been extremely effective, and I think they've shown their ability to, in an election year, really get out the vote. So there's fear, you know, Republicans are they'd like to please AFP.
And I think it works more in the House. You know, the districts are smaller. They're more homogenous. If you're a conservative
2-year cycle.
Right. 2-year cycle. So you're constantly running for re-election. So if you're a conservative House member, you don't want to get on the AFP's bad side. You don't want AFP sending mailers to voters in your district saying you're not a true conservative. Whereas if you're a senator and your district is bigger, you've got a lot of Democrats in your district, you're pretty moderate for the most part. There aren't nearly as many true conservative Senate districts as there are in the House. And so those senators are saying, hey, AFP, I don't appreciate your mailers. And I think, you know, Dietert was very, very strong. Senator Dietert was against the AFP and its mailers. And she basically said, you know, I don't care what you do. I don't like you people.
And this was over the film incentives.
Right.
Right. And one of the things that she also brought up was that or got out of them was that they're a 501c4 and they don't disclose their donors. Mm-hmm. That's the fact that they're funded by the Koch brothers is just sort of a general knowledge sort of thing. But as far as their other donors, how much, when, they don't have to disclose all that like the normal campaign committee would have to do. The interesting thing about that, though, they are spending all this money on ads and stuff during an odd numbered year. They're not. This is for the actual policy goals. This is not for, you know, playing in an election year. This is a group that wants definite policy goals, either bills killed or bills passed.
There were some Senate Republicans, though, who didn't mind the mailers. I mean, I spoke to some folks who actually got a kick out of them and said –
Democrats especially.
and said, yeah, tell people in my district that I support Medicaid expansion. I do support Medicaid expansion. I have no problem with this. And then we actually saw the business community then. It came a day later. You know, they started releasing videos saying that, you know, the Senate had exercised bold leadership and thanking – the Senate for getting out ahead of this issue. The business community, as we know, has been a strong advocate of Medicaid expansion this year. So it's kind of been like a war of mailers and videos and radio spots.
You got to remember, most senators, none of them had to run for reelection in 2014. Many of them have to run for reelection in 2016. That's a presidential year. That means there will be more Democrats voting. So senators know they have to appeal to the middle, not just to the right.
So maybe we have a little bit of, you know, fake outrage going on. So just a little bit.
You're listening to It's About Florida. We've been speaking with the Orlando Sentinel's Gray Rohr, the Miami Herald's Kathleen McGrory, and the Florida Times Union's Tia Mitchell about the ongoing disputes over health care funding and what that means for the rest of the legislative session. Now back to our conversation.
You know, also weighing in here in our budget considerations is the issue of tax cuts. Right. There's a hashtag, you know, no taxes safe, being really pushed by the House. About $700 million worth of tax cuts on the table. We talk about our game of what I call political budget chicken. You know, obviously the tax cuts are in play because the House really wants them and the Senate's like, maybe. You know, so that's also factoring in here, and it's a pretty hefty price tag when we start talking about what's gonna happen to Florida's budget.
Well, when you have the healthcare impasse and then an overall $4.2 billion gap between the House and Senate budgets, anything tied to money is going to be on hold until that's fixed, because that's such a huge chunk of change. So obviously tax cuts and Governor Scott's pretty much top priority of $673 million in tax cuts, Senate says, you know, that's going to be tied to that. We've advanced, you know, $800 million some odd number of different tax cut bills along the way, but we're not going to build it into the budget until we're sure what's going to happen with the hospital dollars. So as Senate Budget Chair Senator Lee said, House is just better at marketing their tax cuts.
Right, because going – you know, it's all tied to the healthcare issue. And at the end of the day, the federal government has made it clear that if nothing else, even if Florida doesn't expand Medicaid and they do get LIP, it's probably going to be a lower amount than the $1.3 billion in federal dollars that Florida has been used to. And LIP, by and large, benefits – I mean, it benefits a lot of hospitals and health clinics, but the safety net hospitals benefit the most because they have the most, you know, uncompensated care, poor people coming in their emergency rooms who don't have health insurance. And – the Miami delegation is not going to let Jackson Memorial falter. The Northeast Florida is not going to let UF Health in Jacksonville falter. Orlando Health, not going to be able to falter. Tampa General, right, not going to be able to falter. So all those hospitals are going to be coming and saying, hey, without this LIP money, we're in the hole. And we need to be, you know, we need the legislature to make sure that we don't lose dollars. And so the Senate has made it clear those dollars could come from the tax cut kind of money available.
And this is where things could get very interesting, though, because the governor has said he does not support using general revenue to fill any potential hole that could be caused by the federal government not carrying out a promise, which is kind of a, you know, not 100% true, because the federal government has said that money is going to sunset. But he does not support – bottom line, he does not support using general revenue to fill behind the LIP hole. And the question becomes, would the governor then veto a budget that does that?
Let's talk about something that's not necessarily Medicaid and budget related. Governor Rick Scott just signed the testing rollback bill. I know some school districts will cheer. Some people will say it didn't go far enough. But now, after about a year of controversy over standardized testing, there's something.
Yeah, the bill does a couple things. It eliminates an 11th grade English test that was actually never given. This was supposed to be the first year for that 11th grade English test. It makes one college readiness test optional. But the truth is, a lot of students are going to take that test anyway. And it eliminates a requirement that all the school districts in Florida come up with their own end of course almost or final exams in every course and every grade level not covered by a state mandated exam. So it does something, yes, and it certainly addresses some parent concerns that there was just way too much testing going on. But there are a lot of groups that are saying that this did not go far enough. PTAs are not thrilled with the final product. The Florida Association of District School Superintendents said that Florida really needed to take a good hard look at pausing school grades this year. You know, it doesn't quite do that. It does that a little bit, but not as much as, you know, a lot of people really wanted. And the teachers union says that it needed to go further, too.
Yeah. I mean, we saw this bill go through many incarnations, and the final product is a lot probably closer to what the House wanted than what the Senate was trying to do in the latter days before it got, you know, back to the Senate. It definitely got watered down because you saw senators like Tom Lee kind of railing against the system that was put in place. And at one point there was a pause in there, and then it got cut out again.
Well, there was consensus among everybody in the legislature that something needed to be done this year, that parents were upset enough that they needed to do something. The problem is that there's a high likelihood that former Governor Jeb Bush is going to be running for president. And if he does indeed run for president, I mean, he will make the education system that he established in Florida, you know, the centerpiece of his platform. And Republican lawmakers are, you know, many of them are very loyal to Jeb, and they were very, very mindful of this. So the question became, how do we give a little something to parents, make them happy, but at the same time protect Governor Bush's legacy? And I think what we see is the final product was their attempt to balance those two things.
And I think his foundation sort of blessed it, at least at the once it passed.
They did, indeed. You know, setting up for the last, what do we have left, 2-3 weeks?
Good
of the
question.
And you already know where I'm going, which is what's going to happen now? It seems like we are pretty much stuck. You've got committees that are like, well, as you know now, we still don't have a budget. We're going to have one more meeting to go take up these three bills that we just never got around to. I mean, they're kind of waffling.
I was talking to a legislator, and that legislator was saying that it seems that this year a lot more bills are making it through committee that maybe wouldn't have otherwise, but it's kind of like they don't have anything else to do right now. So why not have a meeting and pass some more bills? You know, by this time, normally we would be way into budget conference. You know, we would be, the subcommittees would be working together to kind of iron out their differences. And because that hasn't really been done at, you know, there are some high level talks, but they're really not into the nitty gritty because of all the healthcare question marks. And so they're just kind of meeting and passing bills if we don't have a clear lip answer, even if it's not the answer that the Senate wants, even if the federal government say we would, you know, we'll renew lip, but at, you know, this amount, not at the 1.3 million, at least that gives them something to move forward on. And that's what Senate President Gardner has said. He was like, we need the federal government to tell us how much money we have to work with.
So we're basically waffling and trying to buy time. It seems like what's going on here.
Right. I mean, I believe it was Senator Lee, I think I read somewhere, was sort of floating the idea of an extended session. I mean, that's pretty much what's going to have to happen. They either have an extended session or come back for a special session. The legislature is constitutionally obligated to pass a balanced budget every year. The fiscal year starts July 1st. So the May 1st end of the regular legislative session is one deadline, but there are other deadlines after that. It's going to start to get dicey. I think you're going to start to see the hospitals really set their hair on fire. It's true what the House leaders say, that the hospitals by and large can survive on contingency funds until about October. But each hospital is different, and each hospital is going to have to handle this a different way. And it's up in the air, and there's really no certainty at all. for them.
If we look at, I mean, Jackson Health System in Miami, Jackson stands to shoulder a $200 million hit on account of these LIP funds if they don't come through. And I think you will see the Miami-Dade delegation, you know, fight that fight for Jackson because it is such an important institution in the community. I think Gray is absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Flora Hospital is $90 million. I believe Orlando Health is about $60 million. These are numbers in big delegation areas that will add up very quickly. It's a case of House leadership, Senate leadership versus all these interest groups that are clamoring for this money.
I think the question is, you know, will they be enough to get the House votes that they need?
I mean, I've talked to in Jacksonville, the safety net is UF Health, and they say they have, if LIP runs out, they have 6 months of, and after that, they would maybe have to close because they just don't have reserves. And Travis Cummings is a Republican in the House, and he said, you know, I don't think the hospital should panic because the Northeast Florida delegation knows how important this hospital is. We understand their issues. We understand their financial situation, and we're going to have their back.
But I'd say the question is how exactly those hospital dollars get funded. Are they backfilled with state dollars, which Governor Scott said he will not take? Or is there some sort of Medicaid expansion thing? The voting math on that is Democrats all for it in the House make up, what, 38? So they need 20-some-odd Republican 40, members.
40-something.
40-something Republican
but
members.
But you're right. I mean, and I think it's –
but they'd also have to have the leadership of the House allow that to happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's – you know, right now it's easy for everyone to say don't worry about it right now. You know what I mean? Everyone's saying it's not time to, you know, hit the panic button and start looking at plan B, C, and D. They're saying right now let's wait and figure out LIP. That's what they're saying right now.
But the time to panic is coming closer. I mean, it's coming.
I asked Senate Budget Chief Tom Lee in week two when it would be time to panic. He said when both chambers had passed out their budgets and we can't get into conference.
Okay,
that's
so
where we are now.
It's time to panic. So where do we go from here? Are there any more sleeper issues? I know gaming was a sleeper issue and that just sort of fizzled out. Anything left on the table?
There's not a whole lot of oxygen left in the room. I mean, right now it seems like all energy is being directed towards this healthcare issue.
I'd say the food fights, which bubble up every year, the Uber versus the taxi cabs situation, I think might be coming up in the House later this week. This jet fuel battle between large airlines, Southwest and Delta. The other social issues, abortion, guns, those sort of things will all sort of bubble up. But anything that has money tied to it is going to be caught up in this Medicaid situation.
And all of our stories will look exactly the same for the next 3 weeks. Well, you all, thank you so much for joining us here today on It's About Florida. And we'll probably see you back in a post-session wrap-up if this ever gets resolved.
Thanks, Lynn.
See you in June.
All right. Thanks to the Orlando Sentinel's Gray Roar, the Miami Herald's Kathleen McGorry, and the Florida Times Union's Tia Mitchell. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month as we wrap up the end of the 2015 lawmaking session, if the legislature gets done on time.